Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Radio Free Nintendo, and this week we are freeballing.
Ballin'!
We have no plan, no agenda, no preparation, no notes.
No clue.
And we're an hour and 14 minutes late.
Yeah, that's my fault. we're just going to shoot the shit and see what happens. And
worst episode ever.
It might be the best.
That's right.
We did one like this a long time ago, and I thought it was one of my favorites because it was just unpredictable. So we're taking a vacation from the norm this week. We're breaking out of our routine, and I don't know what's gonna happen. It's 2009, baby.
That's right.
Children, stop listening now.
Yeah.
John is on the podcast. Please stop listening.
So what you guys been up to?
Not much, man. Not a whole hell of a lot. Gaming-wise, I got a whole bunch of PS3 games for Christmas.
You are walking dangerously close to new business, son.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when he asks me what's up, I'm telling him what's up. You know?
All right.
That's what's up. But yeah, I mean, I picked up a little Big Planet. Haven't really played too much of it. I haven't really been in the mood for like a platformer kind of thing. I got MotorStorm, and I got SOCOM as well, because I really wanted the headset.
But, wait, you got SOCOM over like Metal Gear Solid 4?
No, I got that already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You bought a game for a headset?
Yeah.
You did the equivalent of Link's crossbow training with a $60 game.
Yeah, but I mean, but SOCOM is actually a fully fledged
training
game
for $60.
I mean, SOCOM is actually like a fully fledged game as opposed to crossbow training, which is pretty much
which
a,
is an
a
awesome,
pack-in.
Which is an awesome right? game that includes future weapons coming to Hyrule.
You wish it does.
You know, I was thinking about Link's crossbow training recently because we were talking about this feature that we want to do. It's not ready to go yet because we're generally about a week behind when we record based on when the show goes out. That's just our schedule. It's always been that way. And so we don't have any suggestions from the listeners yet, so we don't know what we're going to do moving forward with this new feature where we all play the same game. But I was thinking, you know, Link's crossbow training might be an interesting one because it should be fairly easy to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a game that most Nintendo fans haven't played and, I mean, probably don't know as much as they think they do about it.
Yeah.
And everything I've ever heard about it is really good.
Yeah, it's just insubstantial, you know, really.
How good is the Wii Zapper though?
No, it's.
I don't give a fuck about the Zapper.
Yeah, that's not really the point.
Yeah, I'll probably grab the game off GameFly at some point, and it's not going to come with a Zapper, and I don't care. But yeah. I mean, after playing Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles, I thought, you know, the whole light gun thing, it actually works pretty well as long as you build a good game around it, and it's not just a fucking mini game. Mm-hmm. So Link's crossbow training could be pretty cool, actually. I don't know. I kind of want to try it. So I'm gonna throw this out there to our listeners. If it's not too late by the time you hear this, if that sounds good to you, put it in the forum thread. And I'll say this:
if we can stretch that to over a month long of podcasts like the backlog guys, I think we should just all be shot.
Oh dear God.
Yeah.
No, I would. I never intended for us to spend that long on these games.
I personally think that should be our challenge. Can we speak for a month on Link's crossbow training?
Yeah.
Can we do it?
We spoke for a month on Lords of Thunder.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was
no, we spoke for about a week on Lords of Thunder and about 3 weeks on its name and ridiculous music.
Mm-hmm.
So, James, I know you've been working on the big Game of the Year features. And,
yeah, Game of the Year 2009.
2008.
Oh, shit.
And, oops, we got to start over.
You got to change that title right off the bat. Look at that, Johnny.
Son of a bitch.
But for the most part, we ended up picking the games that deserve the awards, or at least, I mean, there weren't any selections that pissed me off, except, you know, Okami is a runner-up.
Okami is
runner-up
for graphics. Yeah, I didn't
Wii.
Like that one either, but I didn't really have a choice in that one.
And just to reiterate what I was saying before we started recording, I love Okami. I own it on PS2, and I think it's a gorgeous game, but it's a 2-year-old PS2 game that they didn't upgrade the graphics on. So I'm not saying it's an ugly game, but I think giving it best Wii graphics is, like, super cynical and should be avoided at all costs. And I was outvoted on that matter, but I made my protest known, and I'm making it known to everyone right now.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, even in some circles, some people might say that it actually looks worse on the Wii than it does on PS2 because of the blurring, which I didn't have a problem with.
Sure, but that's completely personal preference. I don't want to get into that because I haven't even really played it on Wii, but I'm assuming that's a wash either way.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as I say, it's a beautiful game artistically and everything, but it's 2 years old. It would be like giving Chrono Trigger best graphics for DS.
Yeah.
Just because it's beautiful.
It was nominated.
I mean, I love the graphics in that game, but come on, it's 12 years old. Mm-hmm. Well, just how cynical can you get?
Speaking of Chrono Trigger, and I think this is one of the ones that we really struggled. We had a meeting about the awards before we finalized the winners, and one of the things we struggled with was Chrono Trigger, because it wasn't nominated for some awards that you obviously thought it would be, in part because it came out relatively late in the cycle.
Right.
And part because people kind of forgot it that it was coming. I mean, in reality, you could have nominated it in advance of it coming out, and if it totally blew, then we could just pull it. But because, I mean, everybody on staff's played that game, or most everybody, at some point in their life.
Greg, you still haven't yet, have
no,
you?
No, I played it. We've talked about this on multiple shows, including the Radio Trivia Edition where I picked it.
I really need to quit drugs.
Well, that explains the lateness.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, explains
I'm just
a lot,
kidding.
Doesn't it?
I'll never quit.
So it, no, yeah, that was a case.
I don't take drugs.
All right, so
he smokes them. Sorry.
It's tough because when you get all these, even though you know we have a big staff, and across the entire staff, we play a lot of games every year. We don't get to play everything.
Nope.
And sometimes you know, people forget game. We play so many games because of reviews and other things, especially when you can think about going through E3 and just you play 50 games a day. It's hard to keep up with all of them sometimes. And sometimes mm-hmm. a very deserving game that you would have nominated just doesn't come to mind when it comes time to shout out nominations.
Right.
And other times maybe a game like The World Ends With You, maybe only one person or two people on the staff played it, mm-hmm. and they really like it, but they can't get out enough support from the rest of the staff because the rest of us just don't know.
Well, it was like right. that with Korg DS10 and...
Yeah,
I mean, I put that down for best use of DS features. Well,
I might have voted for Korg. I mean, I don't own it, but I played it at E3, and I thought it was hella impressive.
I'm not going to go into the inside baseball stuff about what we're going to do to make sure that doesn't happen, but we're going to try to do better with making sure games get nominated as they come out.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, that way, really, nothing would slip through. We might end up with 20 nominations for every category, but at least we wouldn't forget
until we voted and everything tied at one.
that's another issue.
There was a category where there was this big, giant tie, and it was like 7 games that had one as their vote.
When you have such a small sample size, that happens. And
yeah, and it's frustrating as hell because you sit there and you go, okay, what the hell am I going to do now? You know,
it almost turns into, it's not exactly the same, but sometimes these things turn into 12 Angry Men, and you know, you've got this deadlock, and you have one person who's willing to budge but wants to make sure that all the evidence gets put out there, and it's surprising how fierce some of these arguments can be sometimes. Because people really do care. I mean, if you think we do this process willy-nilly and just slap it up there, you're completely wrong. It takes months and a lot of work and a lot of hand-wringing, I think. Because we want to make sure that the final product is something that we're proud of and that we'll look back to 5 years later and say, yeah, actually, you know, that was probably one of the best games that year.
And, you know, it's important because we do refer people back to the awards. I mean, it does happen. And
it becomes like part of the site's canon.
Yeah. You know, we just say, you know, go back and look at that. See what we did that year.
Canonical, if you will.
And if for us, because how we did voting this year, it's going to be around forever. And I'm ashamed to say that some jackass on staff nominated Brawl for Best Online Wii.
Are you serious?
No way. Yes.
That's pathetic.
And it got a vote.
I wonder if this is someone who doesn't actually have an internet connection.
Oh, see, here's the funny thing.
Maybe they mail in their reviews.
Here it is.
And has someone ghost ride an email. I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Johnny, do you know who nominated Brawl?
No.
You did.
Did I really?
Yes.
In what way? What did I write?
I'm
going to
read you a nomination.
Okay, like, please.
We're sharing replays or something.
Yes.
It's a great online slideshow, Jonathan Metz.
Oh, I know why I did. It had nothing to do with online play.
Why, because it has online play?
I remember this now. The truth will be revealed. James, please, read my testimony.
Smash Brothers. Even though online play is wildly unreliable, it can be really fun when it works.
I love your Jonathan Metz voice, by the way. It's so authoritative. So authoritative.
The daily deliveries of user-created levels, gameplay videos, is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite easy to send your own levels and videos to friends, since the game uses your system friend list. Johnny. Johnny also nominated Wii Music. Many reviewers seem to think this collaborative overdub features the only thing this game does well. Johnny. And Johnny also nominated Blastworks, Animal Crossing, and basically 4 out of the 6 nominees.
I tried to fill out some of the categories, what can I say?
I'm the only one that
devil's
cares
advocate
here,
there.
Johnny.
I don't know who nominated Endless Ocean because they didn't put their name on it.
It's too bad. I mean, Endless Ocean is a very good pick because, like I said, it has online co-op, and if the sequel has voice chat, that could be a really cool activity to do with somebody else.
It's also,
you know, around,
it's also
pictures.
Region-locked online play, which would be better if they corrected that next time.
Yeah, it actually says, the nomination is, this is one of the only Wii games with online cooperative gameplay. That's it. That's the whole nomination. They're
well,
just done.
It's true.
That's all it needs to say.
It's true, and it's noteworthy, I think. I was just going to say, speaking of Blastworks, I actually just rented that from Gamefly, and it's no great shakes, I have to say, but it's interesting. I think the problem with it is that the core shoot-em-up gameplay is just, it's good, but it's not that good. It's not particularly interesting or challenging or satisifying.
It kind of takes a backseat to the editor, I felt.
Absolutely. And the editor is very daunting. I mean, I didn't even get into it. So what it ends up being is that, like, Blastworks, the only reason that you would really get your money's worth out of it is if you're really, really creative and artistic and you want to make your own levels, because the editor is really robust. You can make almost anything. I mean, it's not Little Big Planet, but it's close. I downloaded some levels from the website, which download is like a package to your Wii system. It works really well, and that's why I nominated it, because I'd heard about this. I nominated before I played it, but I'd heard it worked really well, and it really does. And I downloaded some cool shit that's just like, wow, I can't believe someone took all the time to make the first level of Donkey Kong with a Mario character as your ship.
Wow.
But it's still not actually that fun to play through. That's the problem. Like, you can download these awesome-looking levels, but they're not particularly fun because it's not that it's bad. It's not that it's unfun. You know, it's not that I hate it. It's just not very compelling. It's just kind of sits there, the gameplay, I think. It's too bad because it has so many great features, and I definitely appreciate the online support and everything else that it does, but the core gameplay is just really not there.
One of the categories that actually surprised me with how the voting turned out was Surprise Game of the Year, which is, you know, it's usually we give it to a game that comes out of nowhere, you know, or a game that we really just really surprised by the quality. Truly, it's pretty up to interpretation. But Orbient is actually our runner-up, Art Style Orbient. And yeah. I think the runner-up status of that game kind of surprised me. I didn't really expect it to, you know, draw the kind of attention it did. I mean, it got 4 out of 16 votes, which isn't bad.
Yeah, I think the reason that Orbient's on there is that it has more to do with the fact that it was released at all. And the literal surprise of, oh my god, here's this game.
Yeah, I know.
It came out of nowhere.
That's the way WiiWare works, is Nintendo just throws something
Holy
in your face
hell.
And says, here's
Beer
this
pong,
game.
What's that?
You've never heard of this. Here it is. Play it. Buy it. And that's what Orbient was, except in the case of Orbient, it wasn't just another WiiWare game. It was something that was somewhat familiar, but most of us had never played it. We maybe had heard about it. It's also, I think, an excellent game for the price. It's easily the best value on WiiWare, in my opinion, just for what you get. And
so they actually remade that to put it on WiiWare, right? Which is even more surprising.
It's got like 10 extra levels over the GBA version.
Yeah, so not only is it something that, you know, it's not, I mean, they weren't even just taking a game, you know, some random game from Japan and tossing it out on WiiWare. They were actually remaking it for the American market, which is even more random.
Yeah. Well, and to add another surprise onto this game's many surprises, I believe, as I recall, at the time that it came out, we hadn't had anything decent on WiiWare in probably 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
It was surprise, here's something good.
Yeah.
Well, see, the only reason I take issue with this game getting as many votes as it did is I feel like that should have gone under the other surprise award, which is surprise news. Where a lot of times,
but there was no news about Orbient. It was just there one day.
The news is that it exists.
You don't see in the newspaper that a baby's about to appear on your doorstep. You just open the door
see the stork
and
flying
start
away.
Wearing diapers.
No, but once the baby's suddenly there, that's news.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it should have been a news winner, or at least been a news nominee, and it wasn't. Is in fact our nominees for biggest surprise news don't make any damn sense to me. I don't think anybody should have been surprised Nintendo announced another peripheral for the Wii.
Yeah, but it's what the peripheral was. To me, Motion Plus, it could very well be a sea change in the way the platform works. I think they are dividing the market.
Yeah, that's what makes it really surprising for me, because if you look at what they've done with DS until DSi, and which obviously we didn't know about back then, and what they've done with Wii, it's all single SKU, don't divide the market,
right.
Pack things in, make it as simple as possible, transparent, and Wii Motion Plus goes against all of that. I mean, and considering how possibly important the ramifications for a whole bunch of games, you know, I mean, Sin and Punishment do sort of surprising in some, you know, because it's obscure.
But it did do remarkably well on virtual console.
Well, supposedly it did relatively well, yeah. But I mean, it's one game. You know, this is right. In terms of most important. I mean, there's no contest really.
See, I think it all comes down to how you define biggest.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look,
because it could
it
be, you know, how
way.
Surprised were you? And if you weren't fucking stunned when they announced Mega Man 9, you don't have a pulse.
It's the sheer aggressiveness of it on Nintendo's part. It's like, man, I hate to drag out this comparison, but it's the only thing that comes to mind right now. I saw Valkyrie not long ago. It's like Hitler invading France and then saying, you know what? Now we're going to America. I mean, it's just so
on vacation.
Ballsy.
It's more that they
Hitler.
Just don't
it's just the
have,
first thing that came to mind.
Well, they just don't have any
but
particular motivation to do it other than for their own purposes in terms of, you know, they're doing just fine as it is, you know, and the kinds of people that are buying Wiis are probably not that concerned about the absence of, like, very, very accurate one-to-one control. So it's actually much more outside of that box and more like, you know, it seems like it's about fulfilling their original intent on Wii. So it almost seems like it's more creatively driven than a lot of their, you know, more commercially driven decisions have been recently.
Well, I think that's an issue we're going to have to come down and see really what comes out of the Wii Motion Plus too, because we really don't know
about
coming. I mean,
All you know so far is, like I said, you are talking about possibly segmenting the market because you're going to have these games that require it, and
know is that Wii Sports Resort's going to use it, and everything but the kitchen
together.
Sink, the conduit is going to get going to use it too. But
Red Steel 2.
Oh
yeah, supposedly.
You think so?
That's gone.
Isn't that game in hell now? I mean, I thought it was basically
it's on the
record.
It was basically killed.
They just mentioned it exists, and there hasn't been anything. There hasn't been any media or.
I mean, they mentioned it existed way back when.
Yeah,
you know,
and then it was sort of somewhat reaffirmed after E3 because they actually said, you know, that they were going to use Motion Plus and stuff. But in terms of actual media or, you know, a build or anything like that, you haven't seen anything unless it's all just been behind closed doors kind of stuff.
I still think that game's dead. I mean, honestly.
Red Steel 2? No. If you look at the sales of the first one, I think Ubisoft is like, look, we can't, if we're going to make this into a franchise, which we want to do because we sold over 1 million copies of the first one, we've got to make sure the sequel is actually a good game.
Yeah.
Or else
but,
it will
but,
die.
You know, Ubisoft's devotion to the Nintendo platforms in this generation doesn't seem very real, you know? They're quite content to just push out whatever.
I think there is an art to the Rayman games they've been doing.
No, there's not. Johnny, in the commercial, there's someone playing it with their ass. There's no art in
that. No, that's not just the commercial. That is the design of the game.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what I'm saying. They're actually being creative with that series. They're using Nintendo's own peripherals in ways that Nintendo hadn't imagined. And, I mean, they are mini-game thefts, but, you know, by most accounts, they have changed somewhat from game to game. And I think the actual the story and the characters involved in these games are the real reason to play them. I mean, they're hilarious. The characters are truly hilarious, and the gameplay notwithstanding, that's admirable, I find. You know, I'm not going to buy those games, but I'm not going to dismiss them out of hand. It's a very far cry from baby parties or whatever.
Or pets, animal rescues.
Yeah, exactly. Horses, monkeys. I'm happy to support Rayman Raving Rabbids if it's the alternative.
Pets, Monkeys, Operations, Rescues is my favorite game ever, just for the sheer amount of times they force the Z into it. Like, that shows a devotion to complete lack of creativity that I find admirable. But of course, the award that's got us most excited is who won the bet. So we actually had to create a special category for the WiiWare VC Awards, because we kind of lumped them together this year, because there were so many shumps on this year, or...
Not shumps, shmups.
Shmups, whatever.
Shumps. Shumps. Yeah, you're a video game expert. So I was playing this really good shump the other day. It was awesome. What?
But Lords of Thunder's nomination reads, "Figure this deserves a mention considering its massive pimping on RFN, Nick DeMola." Although, ooh, I swear that game came out in 07.
What?
No, it didn't. Nowhere near.
It just feels like it did.
If it came out in 07, then we wouldn't have been podcasted to talk about it.
That's true. So it's right.
We've only been doing this a year. I know we all feel like we're 5 years
old. It feels
older.
Like it's been months. 12 of them.
You know, this is pretty much our first year anniversary of when we recorded our first show. Yeah,
really, very fitting commemoration, if I dare say myself.
Yeah, exactly.
The VC game of the year, we split up into on Nintendo systems and then from non-Nintendo systems. From non-Nintendo systems, we had a pretty close voting. Lords of Thunder came in third out of three with two votes. Mm-hmm. Earthworm Jim came in second, so it's our runner-up. But our winner, Choaniki.
All hail the Man Beam. It was. I think when we look back on last year, it will be recognized as the year of the Man Beam. 2008, Year of the Man Beam, you heard it right here first.
I can almost guarantee we're the only media outlet who's going to give Choaniki a Game of the Year award.
Isn't that awesome? Like,
I'm very proud of that fact.
I hope that Nintendo PR does something with that. Like, we just need to email them and let them know we're giving it an award.
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, can you go update the, what is it, My Nintendo channel? We're giving this game an award.
Yep.
Lords of Thunder.
There you go. Yes.
I had to do it just once for the fans.
There you go.
Choaniki.
The whole Earthworm Jim thing surprises me a little bit, because I don't think of that being a non-Nintendo platform game.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's because they
released
the Genesis version on Virtual Console.
Right. But they haven't... I thought they released both versions this year. I thought they released
didn't.
The Super Nintendo
version. They haven't released the Super Nintendo version. They did, certainly. Okay. There was just too few Super Nintendo games to go around to be releasing stuff that was on other platforms.
Oh, yeah.
it's just the Genesis game, yeah. Which has one extra level, but it's obviously less colourful than the Super Nintendo game.
Right.
Super Nintendo far superior color palette, and I assume the music would have suffered somewhat.
Yeah, but you know, the very first Virtual Console release of 2009 is a Super Nintendo game. So maybe that's a signal that I think the first one of 2008 was as well, but maybe optimistic here. Maybe that's a signal from Nintendo that this will be the year of Super Nintendo.
Well, what game did they release this year, or this week?
Kirby's Dream Land 3.
Kirby's Dream Land 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Super Nintendo, is it? Oh, I didn't know that.
It is Super Nintendo, and it was I think it was the very last first party Nintendo game released.
Oh, is this the one from 96?
It was released in 97.
Oh, 97. Good grief.
Yeah. Well after the N64 had launched, so this was a very late Super Nintendo game. I mean, obviously it was released after Kirby Superstar,
right,
which is generally considered to be the superior game.
Which you'll never get on the DS, I mean on the VC, because it's on the DS.
Right. But I don't know. I recently played Kirby Superstar. I borrowed it from TYP, and I enjoyed aspects of it. I mean, I played pretty much all the way through it, but I didn't find it didn't make me a Kirby believer. It's just yet another, to my mind, mediocre Kirby game. It's fun in places. It's overall very easy and very forgettable later. So I didn't get into it, and I'm definitely not going to pay $8 for a slightly worse sequel to that.
I think that game it is somewhat famous because of this, the sheer amount of variety it had for a game in that era.
I guess so, but in today's atmosphere of DS games and Wii games that are largely built around, you know, little miniature activities,
right,
or bite-sized gameplay. I mean, maybe Kirby Superstar was innovative in that respect at the time, but now it doesn't feel that special anymore. It's not that unusual in its structure, and the other problem is a lot of the modes just repeat on themselves. I mean, there's a mode that you unlock late in the game in the DS version called like Meta Nightmare Deluxe, where you play as Meta Knight, which is cool. And it has some nice touchscreen stuff where you can use some of his special abilities. He ends up playing somewhat differently than Kirby, but you play through literally the entire game up to everything you've already done with Kirby up to that point. So it's like the previous six modes combined into one, and it just goes on forever, and it's boring because you've already done all of it before.
Right.
I mean, that's just kind of the mentality of Kirby Superstar. It constantly recycles itself over and over. And again, as I've said many times before with Kirby, the level design is so non-distinct that one part of the game doesn't feel that much different from the next part. One level isn't necessarily more challenging or more interesting than the level that came before it. So it just feels very samey. It's just like you're just doing the same thing over and over again. I don't know. I just find it to be like just a very plain experience. So, there's my Kirby rant.
Okay. New topic. So, that's all started with what I've been doing. So, Greg, what have you been doing for the next hour?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to feel that. Oh, I've been playing a lot of virtual console stuff with my Japanese Wii.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so
he's turning Japanese, man.
Not really. It's just because that was the one I could get, and they do have a better virtual console. They've got sort of like 120 plus more games than either of the other regions.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And yeah, one of the games that's quite interesting. It wasn't released outside of Japan as a cartridge. This is Pulse Man. I've been playing. Pulse Man is Game Freak. This was before Game Freak became enslaved to Pokemon. Not long before. It must have been one of the last things they did before that, because it was like 94. And this is it's a side-scrolling platform game for the Genesis. Sega published it. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty cool. It's got this very sort of... It's impressive for a Genesis game. Lots
colorful.
Of nice parallax work. Very sort of chunky kind of style. You know, big sprites. Sort of some of them quite impressively animated. It does kind of make your field of vision quite small. You can't really see a whole lot. And like the whole thing is...
Wasn't
like,
Drill Dozers that way too?
I assume it was from what I've read about reviews and stuff. I haven't played it.
I always felt like the character was pretty big.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, GBA stuff is like that quite a lot though, because of the kind of the nature. You know, it's kind of like when you port Yoshi's Island to GBA, obviously that you couldn't see as much because, you know, the low res kind of format. So it wasn't that uncommon to GBA games, and it kind of feels like that, but for a Genesis in terms of it's this kind of constrained view. And sometimes it's a problem because the whole kind of one of the mechanics is that he's got electrical power and you have to like charge it up by running, and he can run quite fast. But the problem is that you start enjoying kind of running fast, but there's a lot of stuff that you can just suddenly hit without really seeing. But you know, it's manageable if you're sensible about it. It's kind of weird game. It starts off with this like Mega Man-ish kind of structure, but it's a bit different. Like you get three levels to choose from to start with, and then you do those three, and then you get another three, and you can kind of, you don't have to do them in order, but you just have to, you can pick between the three different ones. And what happens after you do the first three is like the sort of villains in the game figure out that he's vulnerable to water. So then the next three levels have a bunch of water hazards in. It's quite that's quite sort of unique to have this kind of change in the game's mechanics, essentially, in the middle. You know, that at one point the hazards are about one thing, and then the next time they sort of introduce this new thing in the middle that way. And it's kind of, I guess at the time it probably, I don't know how much impact it would have made, because there would have been an awful lot of those games around at the time, you know, this sort of like Sparkster or any of those kinds of, you know, very sort of showy 2D sort of side-scrolling games. But it's the kind of game that I think would be nice to see as a Genesis import. We haven't got a lot of those, like what Puyo Puyo 2 or whatever. Like, who really cares about that anyway? Because it's Genesis. Right. You know, it's just a Genesis version of a game you've got, like with Kirby's Ghost Drop or whatever the bloody hell it's called. You know, the
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
There we go. Yeah,
that too. Exactly. So this would be a really cool one, because it didn't come out originally, and I guess it's kind of difficult, might be a little difficult to sort of angle as from the makers of Pokemon, because it's a Sega game. But, you know, right. they could probably do that a little bit.
Well, and the aesthetics of it do sort of match Pokemon aesthetics in terms of character design.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount in the character design. It's a very psychedelic game.
Yeah, it is. Times. It's kind of trippy.
But, yeah, like when you get these like electrical things that you kind of enter this electrical world, and then it's like super crazy, all flashy. It's kind of like epileptic fit inducement, the game, at that point. It's
very
intense.
Well, it did come out in Japan.
Also related to Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, there we go, yeah. But it's
epilepsy.
Here's a little trick for you. The main character in that game, he actually showed up in a Pokemon in Diamond and Pearl, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, they put little references, I've heard that they've put references into
yeah,
the various games. And so
I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. Oh, Rotom, which is just motor backwards. Haha. He actually looks quite a bit like Pulse Man's head floating. Mm. And I guess it is an explicit reference to him, because I think the text that comes up, because you actually find him in a TV in the ghost, whatever. You go up and you interact with the TV and he pops out. I think it kind of makes an explicit reference to Pulse Man in the text with the TV.
That's cool. It's like a Saber Wolf thing.
Yeah.
It was the game that Saber Man was in as a cameo. Was it Banjo-Tooie, maybe?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think you're right, yeah.
But actually, Greg, one thing I want to ask you, since you're playing so much Japanese Virtual Console, have you ventured into the territory of Devil World?
Oh, Devil World. I haven't. That's that sort of Pac-Man-y clone with the guy that's in Smash Brothers. And that's actually on the European Virtual Console, because apparently it was released in Europe, that game. But not in America. Bizarre. And any NES game getting released in Europe but not America is like ridiculous to me.
That is
because
weird.
It wasn't that as is. Successful in Europe. So that's shocking. But apparently it was. No, I haven't tried Devil World. I don't know, Pac-Man kind of game. It doesn't sound that interesting. There's so much stuff.
The reason that it's infamous is it is the only game that Miyamoto was involved in directly. I'm sure he was the director. That was never released in North America.
Right.
The only game.
Yeah.
And also, it's a Pac-Man clone with demonic satanic
references.
Hell yes.
I mean, I'm sure that the cultural meaning is probably watered down a lot in Japan.
Sure.
For a lot of those symbols. You know, maybe they just thought it looked cool. But it's just fascinating to me, and if I had access to it, I'm sure I would get that just to try it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's so much. The thing is, I'm working my way through all the stuff, you know, that all the good stuff that, you know, I hadn't been playing on the European one because of the issues like Mega Man 2. You know, I finished that. That's excellent. I love doing that. You know, Axlay, which for some reason is on the Australian PAL Wii shop, but not
weird.
The European
the
one.
Fuck?
Absolutely
that's
bizarre.
Weird.
That is absolutely insane. But yeah, that's a really good game, Axlay, which obviously the Americans have had since the end of 2007, I think.
the end of time, actually.
I don't get it. It's like, why did they release it in Australia, of all places?
It's like, for some reason, we have Super C, as it's called in America. In Europe and in the Power Regions, it was called Pro Protector 2: Return of the Evil Forces.
Yeah, I never understood that rename.
Pro Protector.
Yeah, but so the Europeans have that, and the Australians have Axlay, and we each don't have the other one. It's
like their sprites have been like replaced with medical instruments or something. The you've been protected.
I have to think it was one of those situations where, I don't know, maybe one of the countries in Europe was more like, you know, Germany has a long history of being very difficult to please with censorship, and that may have been they ended up just getting replaced with robots across all, and then they had to maintain continuity. Even Contra Spirits, or, you know, the Contra 3 Alien Wars is super pro-protector or something. They followed all the
well,
way.
Well, you know, Contra is kind of a loaded word in some areas, I guess.
I hear that too.
On a related note, Greg, what is your preference between Star Fox and Lylat Wars?
Oh, God, Lylat.
And
I
go.
I never played that game because I own the Japanese version of both the original Star Fox and Star Fox 64. So,
good for you.
Go. Yeah, Lylat Wars.
I always thought that was an unfortunate renaming.
Yeah, what's strange is that the original Star Fox was renamed Star Wing, which is obviously not that different, but then instead of naming Star Fox 64 Star Wing 64, and therefore identifying it as a sequel, they decided to call it Lylat Wars. Absolutely insane. Why wouldn't you want to build off that, you know, the brand? You know, it doesn't make any sense. They had a copyright issue. I think it was a copyright issue that forced the change to Star Wing, and what happened after that? They had a copyright issue with Star Wing.
Is Nintendo of Europe's legal team like a bunch of interns?
It just confounds me. It really does, because I don't see. I'm not saying that Star Wing was some sort of huge hit in the PAL territories, but it must be worth something. The name, you know, to put. You know, I mean, it was an event game in a way because it was such a big technical deal, and
right.
I know Nintendo promoted that pretty hard, relatively, for a Super NES game in the European market at the time. So why you just cast that all aside for something that sounds pretty bloody terrible? Lylat Wars.
It's like just added onto the pile of ways that the Star Fox franchise has been mismanaged over the years.
Yeah, it's a pretty piffling one, relatively.
Oh, you know, actually, another game I thought about for the new feature that we're gonna do is Star Fox Adventures.
That
would be a
great.
Pretty fascinating game for us to play through together and
play through
have a discussion about.
You know, see, I think that game does
play into.
Yeah.
That game does get a somewhat unfair rap for being, you know.
It really does. I mean, it was a massive disappointment, but it is not a bad game.
No, it's not.
It is easily one of the top five most beautiful GameCube titles.
Oh, yeah, and it was so early, too.
It is fucking gorgeous. It looks better than most Xbox games. It was incredible looking. The graphics are astonishing.
It just wasn't the game people wanted.
It's not the game people wanted, and even for what it is, it's not a particularly good example of the Zelda-type adventure game, you know. Yeah. But it's a fair crack at it. You know, if you took out some of the collecting, it'd be a pretty good game.
You have to get a lot of collecting.
Yeah, you would. It needs a redux. It needs a, you know, it needs an Apocalypse Now director's cut, whatever. But
put in half an hour of Fox making love to French people.
No,
that's right.
I've never seen a game that just goes so crazy with the collecting. I mean,
you almost wonder if it was tongue in cheek or if it was like an Andy Kaufman-esque type thing where they're like, let's see how much of this we can get away with before people will be so pissed off that we'll get sold to a different company.
See, it is almost like Donkey Kong 64 for me, that I didn't, you know, I read the negative feedback and, you know, it just, I won't play it then, but I'm almost compelled to try it and I just see if it really is as bad.
Well, Donkey Kong 64 is probably worse because the collecting slows you down so much more. But
most of the stuff in Star Fox is pretty optional. It's just
right.
That there's a lot of stuff lying around, but it's just like ammo for your magic.
Yeah, but it's literally like the entire ground
so
that's just littered
like, that's more like Banjo then, because a lot of the collectible stuff in Banjo is like, well, everything's consumable. The eggs are consumable.
Yeah, here's a bunch of eggs.
The feathers
you know,
are consumable.
Feathers that you don't need.
And it's just like that. I was kind of obnoxious. I just think, wouldn't it be just make it unlimited? You know, make it an ability. You know,
right.
What I mean, was it really like, oh look, I can't fly over there because I've run out of feathers, so now I'm just gonna have to wander around to find some feathers. I mean, when was that good? And I mean, no. I really don't think resource management has that much of a place in a banjo game.
Not true.
Did you just say Bresource?
No, I didn't. That was not a pun.
Oh, I thought you said Bresource as in Bregal.
Yeah, that would have been a quite obscure reference and a terrible pun at the same time.
I thought that's what you were doing, Greg. What does it say about me?
What it says about what you think of me.
But the
point being that you know that is kind of obnoxious, but ultimately not that important to the game. Though you know,
right.
it's a minor concern. It's just kind of an occasional annoyance. Whereas you know, if it's actually like if that collecting those things was just the whole point of the game. That obviously would be just kind of terrible. And I mean, is that where Donkey Kong 64 is? That's kind of what I'm vague on.
Donkey Kong 64, the item that's basically strewn around everywhere, are bananas. And to get anywhere, you have to collect a shit ton of bananas. But the problem is that not every character can collect every banana. You can only collect bananas for your character. And then you have to go get another character and get the bananas for them. And you have to remember where those bananas you saw as that character are.
You know, one thing I don't think people remember about DK64 is at the very last level of the game, and unfortunately this is, you know, it takes many, many hours to get there, but the very last level of the game is beautifully designed. There are no bananas because you've already gotten them all.
Right.
And it's basically this climb up some kind of tower, the way I remember it at least. It's sort of a vertical climb.
Yeah, and you're right.
It requires constantly switching back and forth between the different apes, and using their special abilities to help each other climb the rest of the way up there. It almost has like a Lost Vikings feel. I mean, the mechanic is different because you're essentially transforming from one monkey into the other rather than swapping out. But it feels like the monkeys are the gorillas, the apes, whatever. They're actually using their distinct powers to help each other out and move collectively forward through a level that was designed for that to happen. And I remember, even as a kid when I was, as a teenager when I was playing that game, I wasn't yet thinking very critically about games. I wasn't really writing about games at the time. And I just remember thinking, damn, I wish the rest of the game had been like this because it would have been a lot more fun. It's just really excellently designed, but it's like 20 minutes of the game. And it's all at the end.
And then you go back, and then you have a boss battle that does do a fair amount of using, you know, the various characters.
I remember absolutely nothing about that.
Oh, it was King K. Rool when, you know, somebody had to punch him, and then somebody had to, you had to use whatever her name was and shrink and go inside his shoe and shoot his toes. And
oh, were you in a boxing ring?
Yes,
like
you
that?
Were in a boxing ring. That's it.
It's all coming back now.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's a very interesting final chapter to the game.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, the rest of it's not that good. But that's rare. All right. Well, why don't we just wrap up the show here? It's been a bit abbreviated, but actually, I think turned out pretty well, all things considered. All right, guys. Well, please continue to leave your suggestions in the talk back for the previous episode, 128. For your ideas for the upcoming feature, and hopefully next episode we will announce the winner of the poll and kind of formulate the plans on how to proceed with that. I'm kind of excited. I'm hoping it's a really interesting game, and just remember, it needs to be something that's fairly accessible, something that we can get our hands on, whether downloading it legally or, you know, something that's not too obscure, basically. That would be nice. But nothing for Virtual Boy. That's just too hard. I would love to have a discussion about Wario Land for Virtual
Boy. Oh,
yeah. It's a brilliant game, but it's just too hard to get. So, you know, somewhere in the middle there. All right, well, that's going to be the end of it. And really quickly, I'll apologize for us not doing any listener mail this week, but I'm sure we'll have it next week. And we do appreciate the questions we've been getting. And if you have anything to say about something we talked about today, maybe the awards. You know, you've got the kingpin of the awards right here,
Jimmy James.
Horn. So you've got a
That's
direct
right.
line to the president of the awards.
Nice.
You've got the red phone in your hand. So if you have any comments on the awards or anything else that's going on, your favorite games of 2009 or, you know, the things you're most excited about that you want us to be talking about in the coming months, you can send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we will definitely read your letter, and we might even read it on the show. So with that, I guess we will bid thee adieu.
Adieu.
All right. So.